If you have a look at the inner circle, Stephen R. Covey and people like Robert Frost would take all that you've said and then push it in the inner circle and go slightly deeper in this way. Look, most human beings that I meet, I ask this question, and how many people do you think I've interviewed at a very deep, very, very deep emotional level in my life? I told you in the prep workbook, over 4,000. I lost count 6 years ago at 4,000. And when I mean deep, I do mean deep. And those of you that have engaged with me in discovery meetings know exactly what I'm talking about. I go deep very fast. Some people don't like it, and we instantly stop the meeting and say goodbye to each other. We just don't find it comfortable. Well, sorry, that's how I work. Yeah? If that's not how you want to work, you don't want to work with me. Because I believe that there is meaning to our lives, that most of us actually want to matter. To leave this earth never having mattered, to me, would be an emotional disaster. Imagine spending 75 years not mattering to anybody. That would kill most people. They'd literally die inside. Well, what I'm trying to communicate in this simple graphic is you need to treat your business like a person. The business needs to have significance to somebody, to matter, to give some sort of contribution to the world around it, particularly your clients who you engage with. I can smell lack of meaning in a business. I can see within about 10-15 minutes whether this business is just a boring machine to create profit. And really, the owner's bored, the people in it are bored, they come to work for the cash, and the clients feel the same. Now, there's nothing wrong with running a business like that. It pays the bills, puts the children in school, feeds them, clothes them, and keeps all of the family financially happy. But I have to tell you, if you're doing 8 to 10 hours a day of your 5-day working life and more, and the rest, and some of you doing 6 and 7, aren't you? What a lousy way to live. What a completely meaningless way to exist, in my view. And in your gut, I think you know it. So why not create something in your life that has meaning? If you're going to spend 8 to 10 hours a day at it, let it have meaning, let it have significance, let it contribute to something, let it be exceptional. Even if it's a one-person band with a pussycat and a paraplanner, it doesn't matter. Why not? If you're going to be there, why not do that? Why be there for 8 to 10 hours a day and it just be a boring, you know, buy something for a dollar and sell it for two? Go and be a window cleaner. They probably earn more than you do. Okay? That's the whole ethos that drives the advisor, Jim. Some guests don't like it. Many guests love it. And that's where we're going. Okay, page 6. Simon, what have I just done in marketing terms by what I've just spouted on about? What have I just done? Simon. 3 words. Starting with this.
All right, what you're trying to do is push out the people that don't believe in what you want to do and where you want to work.
Okay. One of the cutest phrases I learned in the last 2 years was alienate your non-clients. Get them away from your life and your business. They just screw it up. They waste your time, waste your energy, consume your resources, and in the end, you end up with a pretty naff business. Get them out of your life. Alienate those who should not be your clients. And that statement, I was very aggressive in that statement, and some of you were going, whoa, I did it on purpose. Alienate your non-clients. Okay.
Would you alienate your clients immediately? Or do you wait until you've built a bit more of the business, or
no,
straight away?
You have the guts to alienate your non-clients. None of you are starving. None of you are desperate in this room. A few have started new businesses. That's really scary. But most of you have been in business long enough to be able to say, before you come near me, let me alienate. And we spent a whole workshop in workshop 4 talking about how to do that. But I've just done it in workshop 1. Alienate your non-clients. Keep them away if they simply don't feel this is what they want in their life. Okay, memory refresh, page 6. You have no more than 3 minutes to... No, I'll give you 1 minute to stare at that page. The guest will go, The member's responsibility is to clue up the guests in the first box and the second box. Have a bash. Just spend a minute looking at that. The first two boxes... And stop. Kate's table. This is just memory refresh of what you spent 3 pages doing in the preparatory workbook. So I can always tell who hasn't read the preparatory workbook properly. What's all that about? What's an unreasonable life about? Kate's table. Sorry, listen up. Listen up. Go on, Richard, nice and loudly.
Well, we came to the conclusion that creating the unreasonable life is actually where you are at the moment. In the very actions of in most businesses, just doing what you've always done in the way that you've always done it because it feels comfortable and reasonable and happy and touchy-feely actually creates an unreasonable life, which, going back to one of the earlier pages, delivers all those frustrations that you haven't got a business that will run itself, that you're overwhelmed and stressed, etc., etc.
Okay.
All those things. So.
That's interesting. Any other comments on unreasonable life? Do you agree with what he said, or did you read something else in the preparatory workbook? I'm always intrigued about what I try and communicate, and people get it completely different to me. I'm thinking, okay, maybe I didn't say what I wanted to say, or maybe I really didn't.
The thing that came to mind here was how you can create a monster of a business. That you, for instance, on the, if you've got a huge amount of potential clawback on insurance, and you keep feeding it because you've got to feed it because you've got clawback coming off, so you need to sell more protection and take it okay. up front, and then you just do this.
Okay. Anybody else got any thoughts on unreasonable life before we move on to minor nation?
I think the
Stuart.
Unreasonable life is looking at what we are doing now, and perhaps with the work that we looked at, what would be a perfect way of doing business, and it's recognising that things have to change to get to where we want to be.
Okay, very good. Here's my take on what I wrote on the preparatory report, I'm sorry, which may not be what you read. Wendy and I have this method of talking which is called talking sideways, and if you're married or you've, you know, had long-term partners or partner, you probably do the same. Talking sideways is where I talk like that, talking about this subject here. Wendy hears that. Call that talking sideways. And Wendy and I do it all the time. I talk squares and she hears triangles. I sit there thinking, am I talking Chinese? Or are we having a different conversation here? For example, it may be, and she does the same to me, maybe I say, so how much did that dress cost for Bryony? Because, you know, we haven't got a lot to spare this month. Well, actually, it was interesting because we went in a shop to buy a handbag and Bryony wanted black and I wanted to discuss a different. How much did the dress cost? Well, no, let me finish. Because we were talking about black and white handbags, and we could go on like half an hour, and I never get to find out how much the dress cost. And it took...
Yes.
It took me 40 years to work. But it took me 48 years to work that one out, because I'm really slow. But that's just what happens when people think differently in communication terms. What I wrote about the unreasonable life is this. almost all of us get tracked, get along a groove which says something like, I'll work my butt off till about 55, 60 and then live the life I really want to live. And the message in the preparatory work was, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to do that? And normally I hear, and I want to sell the business for $1.5 million so that we can do this. And then we sit down and I say, have you done your financial cash flow projections for yourself as your own client? No, never done it. Done it for all my clients, but never. Use Truth software, yeah? Done it for my clients. Never. Where's yours? Never done it. And when we actually do one, I found out they don't need $1.5 million. What they need is £3,500 a month to do the most amazing things with their life. You know, go to amazing places and do phenomenally exciting things. But frankly, by the time you're 60, your body won't function well anyway. You're clapped out. And you're not going to enjoy all the things you dreamed about. Probably got about 14 years to live and that's your lot. And I said, well, why not be unreasonable about the whole thing? Why would you want to wait till you're 55, 60? Live the life you want to live and structure a business that will release you to live that life. But you and I, most of the people in this room, have been brought up from the time we were 20 to plot 40 years and then retire and live the life we want to live. And I began looking at this and thinking, what a heap of rubbish. What a complete heap of nonsense. What a lousy life plan. It doesn't financially or physically or emotionally make sense. Let's be unreasonable about this and actually start challenges. You can't do it because your business won't function in that way.
Quite interesting this, because we've got a client at the moment, and I'm sure we've all experienced this, but they've done exactly that. They've worked hard for 40 years. They're a couple that are 66 years of age, just sold the business. They're sat on money now that they can enjoy themselves with. They're worried that they've got enough money, but now they just cannot come to terms with retirement. Just cannot. Yeah. See themselves retired and don't like it. They've only been retired for about 3-4 weeks.
Yes.
And are deeply, deeply depressed about being retired.
I work and live with people who have lots of mini retirements from the age of about 40 when they're really still physically quite fit. Lots and lots. Within our church structure, lots go on missions for 2 years or 18 months or even 3 years. My best friend Chris Charles, who's the accountant in the Soul Millionaire book, he's actually a real person, he's called Chris Charles, he's on a 3-year presiding mission over Greece, he's responsible for the whole of Greece for the church he's a member of. You know, he's just living the life he wants to live now, not when he's clapped out. The whole plan is too boringly reasonable, and it doesn't make any financial or life sense. So one of the reasons for getting you to create a business which will free you is to think about being a bit unreasonable and living the life you want to live now, not when you can sell the business for $1.5 million. It doesn't make sense, doesn't stack up. And the reason is because you've never done your own cash flow projections and you're waiting for some amazing time in the future where you can sell it for what?
Are you saying that shouldn't come into our radar? Because we're all, or most of us are, running our own businesses.
I'm saying you should be able to create a vehicle which will release you to be a bit unreasonable and live the life you want to live sooner rather than much, much, much later. So that's just a memory refresh. Shouldn't have spent that much time. Minor Nation, come on members, Minor Nation, what does it mean? Teach me.
Cow paths.
Go on. Actually, what's really interesting is somebody brought to the workshop, without my knowledge, the poem about the car path. It's a very famous poem. I didn't understand it until he read it. Carry on, car paths.
Well, it was Gordon or Stewart, actually. I'll take the credit. I couldn't remember what Myler Nation meant, but it was, I think it was Boston, was it? There was a city created on cow paths rather than the American grid-style city for New York or...
Okay. Almost all major metropolises in this country and initially in America were built on the path walked by a bunch of cows.
So
which were then followed by the farmer, then by the tractor, then by the horses, then by the horse and wagon and carts, then by the little old Fords, and then by the traffic, and then by the road builders. And what's that got to do with myelin and myelination?
It's like the line of least resistance that cows have followed. You might be round the river this way and over that hill and around the side.
So tell me about myelin. What's that got to do with us in this room? And why is that a problem? Because it is a problem.
Following
it is
the line of least resistance, you should follow the path that you want to go on.
What's myelin?
It's to do with how your brain works.
Carry on.
And how you get a set way of thinking. And that you know, this must be right, this is what we've always done. And that, you know, I can't seek to do anything different because I'm so used to doing it this way.
What's myelin? You're right.
It's the connection or something, isn't it? Your brain or that.
Yeah, when you work, thank you, Simon. I mean, together, you're right. When you first meet a problem as a child, or as a teenager, as an adolescent, as an adult, you work it out, and the brain lays a chemical path using a chemical called myelin within its own system. And just like ants lay chemicals to follow paths so they can all communicate with each other and not waste time running around not finding any food. You ever watched ants work? That's how they work. The brain does the same because it's lazy. It says, to heck with working this thing out twice, I'll work it out once, lay a myelin path. Next time you meet something fairly similar, I'll try and follow the same myelinated path in your brain to reach a conclusion. The fact that the conclusion may be total lot of rubbish, may be very ineffective and inefficient, the brain doesn't bother about that. You then come to me after 10, 15 and 20 years of myelination of the way you do things in your life and say to me, can you change my business in a year? And I'm fighting against 20 years of myelinated processes in your brain about when you meet this problem or situation, this is how my brain deals with it. And I'm looking at you thinking, oh my goodness, have I got some work to do with your myelinated brain? That's the problem you all bring to me.
So this is about what you talk about, is it unlearning?
It's basically having trodden cow paths that everybody else has trodden, that's what you were taught was the solution. I've got to then unmyelinate you, unlearn you, and then relearn you. Because I have to tell you, the solutions outside of the industry are far better than the ones in the industry. And how were you myelinated? Who myelinated you? Who so set these processes up so that you think this is the way you do things here and this is where you solve client problems? So who did that?
The insurance company.
All the forces around you.
Just going down the path of everyone else.
Yeah, you just followed the cow path. Because he was doing it and it produced 10,000 quid a year and, you know, put his name on the leaderboard, you thought that must be the way to deal with it. Because, you know, he's up there and he's in front of everybody clapping him and all that kind of production. Just the way we learn as human beings, and we think because it's a solution, it is a great solution. What you don't know in your isolated pocket of IFAism is that there's a business down the road, just a few hundred yards away, that's got a solution that's probably 10 to 15 times as effective as yours, and it shows. But you've never asked them what it is. And when you meet it, you think, well, I don't want to work like that because this is the way we do things here. Yeah? Particularly when you're isolated, myelination. It's quite dangerous, but it's very efficient for the brain to work. Tell me what conditions is all about. This is just memory refresh. You should be doing this very quickly. What's conditions all about? Teach me.
Well, you're conditioned in the way we have thought historically. So we have to unlearn what we've learned before. Typical IFA will go for the big hit in terms of commission without any structure in building the business for regular recurring income. So that has been conditioned, he has been conditioned over many, many years because of the insurance company process.
Okay, you're getting close, but it's bigger than that, Fred. And I have to tell you, across the country, about half of you got it, and half of you thought you got it and didn't really get it at all. But that's because the concept was so new, it was a bit of a struggle. So let's just turn to the next page, page 7, and I want the members to teach the guests using that page and the next page, page 8, about what on earth conditions are.
by the revert in five.
All right, let's stop. Let's see how close you've got. These two pages are quite hard work. And the reason why they're hard work is if they were easy, then all of your peer group would simply understand it and be behaving like this, and this is not how your peer group behaves. And the industry reflects the inability to think in this way. And if you can crack this, you will simply be a different type of human being working in this industry to anybody else of the 50-odd thousand in this industry. So let's take a few examples about how conditionings work. Most of us work on weekly or daily action plans. Who uses daily and weekly to-do lists? Okay? That's the level most of us work on. What is the problem with daily to-do lists? What is its...
Never ends.
Sorry?
Never ends.
It is never ending, but what is the actual inherent problem with having a daily to-do list?
It's too small.
Now, his is never ending, yours is too small.
Too small a time frame.
Too smaller?
Time frame. You just keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
Okay.
You never get in the helicopter and look at it.
All right.
It's doing what's urgent rather than what's important.
Yeah. The problem with daily to-do lists is the only way they do is prioritise the urgent, which is broadly what you're all saying. They're simply prioritising what's already urgent. It may not have anything to do with what's really important in the next 3 to 5 years of your life. But that's where most people work. Then who here has been trained and been to workshops and seminars discussing goal setting? Yeah? And you all know about SMART goals. Yeah? There isn't a person in the room who doesn't know about that. And that's where most people stop. If I can set a 1 year or 3 year set of SMART goals, I'm really cracking it. People who lead any industry or profession don't work like that. Well, that goes on anyway. That's a given. But that's not where they start. They ask the question, and it's the question that does it. How can I create... Listen to the question. If you don't get this, then the rest of the day is lost. How can I create a set of conditions where success becomes inevitable? I'll repeat that. How can I create a series of conditions, I'll change the word success, where the outcome is inevitable? Say it once more. How can I create a series of conditions in my life or my business where the outcome is inevitable, or near as darn it? Because we all have choice and we can all screw up. How can I do that? Well, if you look at what's happened, for example, in our industry, there have been condition setters, haven't there, over the last 30 or 40 years. You didn't set the conditions of how you worked 20 years ago when you came into this industry. You took it as it was. This is the way I get paid. This is the way I speak. This is the way I do things. This is the products of you. This is the way it works here. Well, you didn't set that. You think you did, but you didn't. People around you working up here set the conditions for the way they wanted you to work to benefit them. Nothing to have been good or bad, that's just how it worked. So I set the condition about how you were remunerated if I were a product provider. Agreed? Only recently have you started to change that, probably in the last 5 years max. I even decided what language you used to talk about our industry within it and to your clients. And we've seen role plays, haven't we, where I can't get this language and this thinking pattern out of your heads to talk to each other. You will not stop talking like a financial advisor when the client didn't ask you that question. They ask you something completely different, but because you're conditioned, but you didn't set those conditions, you didn't learn that voluntarily, it was set for you by other people. They decided how they wanted you to think and behave and act and talk, and you followed it. Nothing wrong with that, that's just how it works. But that's what I mean by conditions. They didn't work on a daily to-do list. They said, how do we want these guys and girls to think? Then we'll set the conditions so that automatically they think like that, whether they like it or not. Now my question to you is, how can you do that? Not to a whole industry, it's not that big a problem, to one little dinky business that you're running. Can't be that hard. They can do it to thousands of you, you can do it to three of you, or five of you. The question is how. And all of the rest of today is how to do that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Recondition, Peter and I have very much a similar philosophy of life. That's why Peter's here, because we think very similarly. And we've known each other for a while, and he's married to the daughter of one of my best friends, and, you know, it's all pretty incestuous stuff. But we condition our children to think and behave in certain ways from birth, and to treat other people in certain ways, and to treat their siblings in certain ways, and to function at school in certain ways. We spend hundreds of hours conditioning them to become the kind of human beings that they will be proud to be significant, meaningful, contributing, legacy-leaving human beings. We condition them. Frequently they break free, because that's what they do, don't they? But guess what? They always come back again. We have family evenings on a Monday, as most of you know. TV goes off, everything shuts off, no other activity, the family's together. It's a really simple thing. Sometimes it's a Sunday evening, but usually it's a Monday evening. We call it family home evening. And if we go out, we go out together. And the kids constantly fight against it. You know, if you want to sit down and talk, they're tearing the place apart and kicking each other to death and anything not to be in family home evening. And we just carry on doing it year after year. Oh, this is really boring, Mum. Don't want to sit down, don't want to sing songs, don't want to have a prayer, don't want to watch the film, don't want to go to the park together. Oh, it's really boring, I want to go and play with my mates. But guess what happens? They reach in their 20s, they get married, and guess what they have? Family home evening goes automatically to the next generation and they gather their children, it starts all over again. Something so simple, but it just conditions them to treat their family in a certain way. And so it goes on. Just tiny examples of what could be really huge. So why don't we condition, and the result becomes almost inevitable. Almost inevitable. Turn to page 9. I want you to write a personal example of where you have tried to set a condition in your life to create an outcome, not an action, where you started to set a series of conditions and behaviour patterns because you wanted a certain outcome. Just write a personal example of that. We'll share it later on today. I've given you a very simple, silly example. Oh, here's a condition. Down in Newbury, I made the mistake of talking to James Cheatham, one of the members, about the fact that neither of us had been to the gym for 8 weeks, me because of an operation and him because of something else. And he suddenly, in the middle of the workshop, got me and said, right, condition, you will go to the gym 5 days a week from next week onwards. You will email me at 9 o'clock every Friday morning to tell me that you've done it, and I will report back to the rest of the members. Condition. The condition had been set. What was at stake? What was at stake?
Pride.
Pride and integrity. He put my integrity on the line because I promised him I'd go to the gym privately, and he made it public. Dave Scott's going to gym, he's promised me that publicly, this is what's now going to happen. He just set a condition, he got me in the middle of this discussion. And everybody would just all be laughing. He set a condition where it will happen. Try and think of a private example where you've done that in your life so that the outcome will happen. And some of you may never have thought of doing this.